Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to hour two of the program, and thank you for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. We'll be getting to the phones in just a moment. This is a note that came in this morning from Leah. She's listening down Texas way, and she says, "Hi, Patrick. I'd like to hear your opinion on dating and pornography use. I'm a young Catholic woman looking for a good Catholic man to date and marry. Pornography is not something I personally struggle with, but I know how prevalent it is today, and I suspect it's all too common, an all too common struggle among young men striving to follow Christ. My question is, what should I tolerate if I begin dating a man and become aware he's using pornography? Should I expect zero pornography use? Honestly, the thought of pornography is repulsive, and I do not want to deal with this in a relationship, but I know temptation can be very difficult to resist in the current culture. Thanks for your advice." Well, simply put, I would say, yes, you should have zero tolerance for it. The way you phrased it is good, struggling with pornography. And that's, I guess you might say, that's the key, is if man or woman, if the person is struggling, meaning that they're trying to reject it, trying to shake it off, trying to get away from it. And I would make that as a distinction between somebody who's actively trying to avoid it and stay away from it, that's struggling with it, versus somebody who knows that it's bad and does it anyway and feels bad about it. That's not struggling. You're not struggling. I'm not talking to you personally, Leah. I'm just saying rhetorically you. You're fooling yourself if you say that you struggle with pornography, but part of your quote-unquote struggle is you just keep doing it and you keep watching it and you keep, you know, going back to confess. That's not really struggling with pornography. I mean, maybe in a very weak sort of sense. But to truly struggle is to, well, what did Jesus say? He said, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Throw it away. So I'm not advocating that you take that seriously because, I mean, take that literally, excuse me. Take it seriously for sure, but not literally. But I think Jesus is really clear that you have to be radical in your struggle against whatever the sin may be. And this is the sin we're discussing right now. So what does it mean to be radical? Well, if your problem is that you look at pornography because you have a smartphone, then get rid of it. Go back to a dumb phone. Well, I don't want a dumb phone. I can't do certain. Well, okay, then you can't do certain things. Well, I like my smartphone because all the stuff that I, you know, all the email and texting, and I've got to do it. No, you don't. You don't have to do those things on a smartphone. And dumb phones, you know, the flip phones from the 90s, I mean, they can do everything that you would need to do by way of sending a text or making a phone call, things like that. They're rudimentary on purpose because for people who know that it's a real occasion of sin for them to have a smartphone or a laptop or have a computer in a room where nobody goes into and you can close the door and nobody sees. This is what I'm saying. Jesus is saying, if you want to go to heaven, you have to be radical in your struggle against these things. That's real struggle. But just doing it and doing it, doing it and feeling bad about it and I know I shouldn't do it, but that's not really struggling. That's my point. So back to you, Leah, what I would say is, in your conversations with whoever the young man is that you start talking to and you're thinking maybe he might be somebody worthy of you, at the appropriate time, this should come up. You should ask him about it. You know, what are your thoughts about pornography? It's an uncomfortable topic, certainly, but it's an important one. And you deserve to know the truth about this. So if the guy says, here's a couple scenarios that come to my mind. So if the guy says to you, you know what, I'm ashamed to say it, but yeah, there was a time when I did use pornography. I felt really bad about it. And I finally was able to get that out of my life. I'm committed to never using it again. And it happened in the past, but it's certainly not happening now. And I I'm going to do anything to stop from going back to it. Sure. He seems like a guy who's got his head screwed on straight. Now, all other things being equal, that sounds to me like a guy who knows who he is and what he wants, and he's willing to fight for it. So that to me seems like a good sign. If the guy says to you, well, yeah, you know, hate to admit it, but yeah, I do use it. I would just, at that point, I would say, well, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Because if he's in the midst of it, number one, it's not your role to fix him. It's not your role to be his psychotherapist. Your role is obviously to find a worthy young man. So in my view, and I, you know, maybe some people say, well, you're awfully harsh, Mr. Madrid. I think there's a time and place to be somewhat harsh. This is one of them. And if you're considering a young man and he's wallowing pornography on the side, I would move on personally. And worse yet, if you meet a guy who's like okay with it, and he seems really nice in many other ways, and he's good to you, and he holds the door open for you, and he buys you dinner, and he's polite, and yet he's using pornography, and he doesn't see a problem with it, I would definitely move on. So that's my advice. I would recommend you get a book by Steve Wood. It's called The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband. His website is dads.org. You can get this at your local Catholic bookstore. And Steve doesn't listen to the program, and he doesn't even know that I'm mentioning this, and there's no connection to me. Other than that, I know that it's a really good book for people in your situation. So I recommend it, The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband. And he wrote another book. It's a different book with different information, but it's on the same general theme, and that is The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. So let's say, I'm going to leave it at this, Leah, let's say that at some point soon you meet the guy who seems to check all the boxes. He's like the guy that you've been waiting for. Well, if you've been reading this book, The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband, you're going to know a lot of things to look for and what the red flags are as well, pornography being one of them. But I would say if you think that he might be the guy, then get him a copy of that other book. Give him a copy of The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. Because then the two of you, in many respects, are going to be on the same page. And you can say to him, you know, this is the template that I personally think is helpful. So this will give you some clarity of thought as we proceed into our relationship. So that's my advice. That's the same advice I've given my daughters, Leah, and I'm happy to give you that advice. Thanks for asking me about it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Liz now in Northern California. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I wanted to comment on the last caller, Leah, regarding the pornography and dating. And I'm here to tell you that it is prevalent and it's out there, but stand your ground because it can sneak in. I'm not kidding you. I've met a few nice Catholic men in Mass that go to daily Mass, and all of a sudden, 3 months into it, they start talking about it, and it's like, whoa, pump the brakes. And
they they start talking about it in what way? Like they're happy about it, or how?
Would you be open to watching it? And don't you think it's okay? And these people are receiving communion. And then, you know, my whole thing is, first of all, you cannot receive communion in that state that you're in, and you're not in the state of grace. And then I become the wet blanket. And then I pray for them insistently, and they are so far gone into it that it's, not even, it's a thing. It's a real thing, but I know that God has somebody for Leah, and just stay focused on that and don't be afraid to walk away because he'll give you another opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. I do agree with that. One thing I think, Liz, I don't know that maybe I have seen statistics. Perhaps that's what's making me think this, but I believe that it would be extremely rare nowadays to find any man who has not in some way had some involvement in pornography, even just some minor passing involvement. It's so ubiquitous, and it's so, it's everywhere now, that for me, if I were in your situation, to me, that would not be a deal breaker if he said, yeah, I had a problem with it before, I don't anymore, I don't use it, I don't watch it. To me, that's a whole different category than somebody like the person you're describing, where I wouldn't. Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah, it's agreed. So many people, and so many women too, for that matter. It's no longer, maybe, you know, at one time it was something predominantly men would be involved in, but now it's across the board, men and women. I hear, I don't hear confessions, Liz, because I'm not a priest. But I've talked to many priests over the years, up and down and all around the country, traveling and speaking. And this is a topic that I'm interested in. You know, what kind of things do you hear in the confessional? And the number one thing that I'm told by priests in all parts of the country is pornography. And it's men and women. So my guess is that as difficult as it is for the young women like yourself to find a man who's, you know, sufficiently untainted by this, it's probably difficult for a lot of men too, because this is a problem that affects so many women as well.
Yeah, agreed. Totally.
So if I can ask you, if you don't mind me asking you, have you been successful in finding the right guy?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. I haven't. You know, I've been through the dating rigmarole, and I'm constantly praying. Right now, I'm called to take care of my mom. She's 85, and she has dementia, and so I'm kind of strapped with that, so to speak. So
God
my focus
you.
Is more on that. Oh, thanks. She was good to us as we grew up, so I have to, you know.
Yes.
Part of the cycle of life, you know.
Very true. So. Well, Liz, for what it's worth, I will pray for you that as time unfolds, that God will lead you to that special someone and vice versa. And I know it's got to be maybe at times a bit disappointing, perhaps, but hang in there.
Yeah.
You're doing the right
thing.
Thank
you.
You're welcome,
you
Liz. Thank you.
You give me life every morning. And I thank you so much. And Cyrus is right on point with, I think I'm probably his age in terms of all of the movie quotes he throws out. And right when he does it, I was like, I would have done the same thing. So thank you guys. You guys are a great pair.
Thanks, Liz. Thank you. I don't know what to say, but thank you. Very kind of you. Glad we can be here for you. Just got a note. It just literally came in seconds ago. This is from Anonymous, listening on the Relevant Radio app, and the message is simple. Patrick, I'm a woman who struggles with pornography. I think this affects many women, and I think you're right, Anonymous. I mean, like I said, I don't hear confessions, but I talk to a lot of priests who do, and that's what they're telling me, that this is a very, very common problem. And of course, the other sins, one in particular, that always associate with watching pornography. And it's just like a tidal wave. So back to the question that was asked earlier by Leah in the email, and thanks Anonymous, I appreciate the email. The question Leah asked is, what's your advice if you're a young woman and you're trying to find a good husband? How do you handle this issue? Well, I think you have to be strict, and it would be a mistake to say, well, he's great in so many other ways, so I'll just overlook this one thing. Uh-uh. it's a pernicious activity that will create lots of problems, much bigger problems down the road. So don't even go down that road. If you're aware of it, don't go down that road. And hey, you know, if you find yourself in this situation, there are people and resources that can help you. So Matt Fradd, F-R-A-D-D, has got a couple of books on pornography addiction and how to beat it. I'm trying to think of one of those. The porn addiction would be one example. That would be from Ignatius Press, and it gets into the kind of the medical and scientific, physiological things that porn does to you. Also, I talked about Steve Wood a minute ago. He too has got a great set of resources for, especially for men, but I don't think it's just for men. And so that would include CDs or nowadays digital downloads and books and things like that. There are plenty of things, thankfully, out there that can help you get past this. And God's grace, of course, is the most fundamental thing of all. Without God's grace, you wouldn't be able to do it at all. But avail yourself of these resources. Avail yourself of them. And don't be... I was surprised, happily surprised, at my parish. They have a group that gets together, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I saw it, I think, for the first time in the bulletin this past week. And it's for people dealing with addiction, and it gives in the squib below the headline, it says alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, pornography, sexual addiction, you know, all the various forms of addiction. And so there's a parish group that I didn't realize was there that meets on a weekly basis, kind of like an AA kind of group. So that's great. And maybe there's a group like that in your own parish. And if you find yourself struggling, well, you know, look around and you may find something like that that can help you as well. Let's go now to Fred in Hayward, California. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Okay. Interesting enough, going back to Thomas, I am one of those miracles.
Tell me about what miracle.
Okay. Apparently, my mother had more faith than I did. She worked in the airline industry, and while I had epilepsy in my teenage years, she took me over there, and I took a bath in the spring.
Okay.
And inside of 10 years, my epilepsy was gone.
Wow. How old were you at the time?
I'm figuring between 15 and 25.
Okay. Well, you don't remember how old you were when you went there?
I've had about four or five trips to... I had about four trips to Europe.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It was mostly during high school.
I understand. So it wasn't just one visit to Lourdes. You went several times.
Well, interesting enough, that was I believe that was my third trip to Europe. Is that we went to London and then to... And then to Lourdes from there.
Well, wouldn't it be a great thing if it was associated with your visit to Lourdes that God granted you healing? What a wonderful thing.
True, true. Well, the interesting part was that when you were describing the step-by-step over there, what I recall is that they had, over the spring on a wire, they had a board of prayers before you take a dip in about three or four different languages. Mm-hmm. So they were really welcoming different pilgrims from different parts of the world.
Yeah. They come from all over.
Yes, sir.
What an amazing experience.
That's the truth.
Well, God bless you, Fred. God bless you. I'm happy to hear that it went that way, and what a wonderful thing to be freed from epilepsy. And if it was Our Lady interceding for you, so much the better. Thanks, Fred. I'm coming right back. Your phone calls are straight ahead. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Emails are rolling in. People are saying, yes, this pornography issue is a big deal. It is. But you know what? God's grace is more powerful than your sin. Never forget that. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Here, Cyrus, I'm going to put my bass down for a second. How I wish I could play like that. That guy's smoking. Yeah. Jose.
It's Mission Impossible?
Yeah,
oh, no,
that's
this is
what that
007.
Is.
That was a bad joke. I retract
da,
that.
Da, da. That's right. Now that I think about it. All right, Jose in Wisconsin, thank you for waiting and welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I just want to share a little bit of my story.
Okay.
Nearly 30 years ago, I was exposed to pornography, and that became an addiction. And I'm agree with your point that people needs to be like girls dating the boys. That's gonna be really difficult for the guys to date a guy like that, especially he haven't give it away yet, or he haven't give it to the law or have any treatment, because that is really many issues that the couple can struggle with. I'm firmly agree 100%.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that.
Then, mm-hmm. Yes.
No, I think you mentioned you were going to tell your story. Was there some aspect you wanted to share? Remember, this is family radio too, so be discreet.
Yes. I've been hearing to your program many years, so, and contributing to the Reverend Radio.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be sensitive about it too. And, you know, parents have to be really careful when they let their kids go to another friends and choose their friends in a sense, because that's exactly what it brought me to being exposed to the pornography.
Mm-hmm.
So it was with friends, when a school friend, if you can call a friend, and then they know where the pornography had it. They had the pornography mm-hmm. at their parents. So he had it a hidden spot, but the kids and one of my classmates also knew about it. And then we were a couple of friends and we started watching. I don't even know that we were going to watch a movie that is that it has that on it. So that started me with the addiction for 9 years into thanks to a retreat and the prayers of my mom, that God delivered me from the addiction. Was like 9 years. I was 9 years old when I was, close to 10 years old when I was first exposed to pornography.
Oh my.
And it's a real danger. Like around.
How did you?
Nearly 3 years ago.
I cut you off accidentally. So what happened 3 years ago?
No, nearly 3 years, 30 years ago.
It was oh, 30
when I was
years
first
ago. Okay.
Exposed. Yeah.
I got it. So what was it that helped you turn the corner? I mean, that's an entrenched habit for all those years. What happened that made you, that let you get free from that?
Honestly, you know, it was through a charismatic renewal.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a retreat or an encounter with Christ, and it was probably a little bit more a spiritual encounter that kind of set me free, because normally in what I hear from your program, there is a lot of people that needs to, you know, detox, go to a treatment or a psychologist or therapist to overcome it. So once that happened, first of all, God prepared my heart for that. And I had other problems in my family, and I was also a resentment towards God, and also kind of contributed with the problem. So when I went to a retreat, my heart was kind of already giving it away, the pornography addiction, but it was really strong because from when I was from 9 to 18 years old, and the other thing that people does when does pornography was prevalent, but later on when I was about 14, that make it way more harder. So when I went to that retreat, I, in a sense, what I experienced there. I met Christ and delivered me from that. I got, I have the.
Was it an instantaneous liberation, or did you stumble a few times, or was it like cold turkey from one day to the next?
It was a cold turkey, you know, like stop. But actually, it was an incident before that I wanted not to do it anymore, yeah. But I was struggling a lot. And then that time, it gave me way more strength to keep going. And I stumbled like 2 or 3 years after that, mm-hmm. like once for a period of time of a week, and then go to confession. And from those 2 years that happened to now, I haven't been addicted to pornography, like probably 25 years or so.
Praise God. Or more. That's wonderful. You know, Jose, as you're describing it, it just tracks so closely with other forms of addiction. So, you know, let's say alcohol addiction, for example, where people, they celebrate, you know, one day of sobriety, 1 week of sobriety, 1 year of sobriety. And as I understand it, this is why the AA meetings are so important, because you get the support you need to be able to get through the next day and then the next day and then the next day. And even just one slip can, you know, it takes away all the gains that you made for all that time. So having that consistent insistence on I'm not going to do this is, I mean, you don't need me to tell you, you went through it yourself, but I think it's so great that you're sharing that with people right now. Thank you for that. And I'm sure you've given a lot of hope for people who are in that very situation right now. Please God. Thanks, Jose. Let's go to Lucy now in San Diego. Good morning, Lucy.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. What's up?
So I have a friend who identifies as bisexual. When we first met, we're both in college, and when she approached me to be friends, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't know she was bisexual until a couple months later when she confided in me that she was bisexual. And I said, okay, I want you to know, well, you already know, but make it very clear mm-hmm. that I am a Catholic and I do not support that lifestyle, but I will still continue to be your friend. And she's like, okay, I appreciate that. And I then asked her why she initially wanted to be friends with me, why she approached me. And she said, mm-hmm. In all honesty, it's because I thought you were really pretty. And then she said, I don't mean it in a sexual standpoint. I just thought you were really pretty. But mm-hmm. now knowing that, I'm just concerned about our friendship because I don't want to do anything that will unintentionally push her down that path further. Mm-hmm. We're still friends because she struggles with her faith, and she is curious about the Catholic faith, and she'll ask me questions about the faith, and I'll answer them in to the best of my abilities. But my just concern is still being friends with her because she said that she initially wanted to be friends because she found me attractive.
Yeah.
And then she, I don't know.
Go ahead, Lucy. Go ahead. Was there more?
A little bit, because she, just the other day, she asked me for advice about a girl that asked her out. And I just had to be frank with her and said, I honestly don't support that kinds of relationship. But then again, as for when it comes to relationships in general, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should be getting into them unless they have a specific reason to. And for me, getting into a relationship means I want to bring that person closer to God, and I want that person to bring me closer to God.
Right.
So I think if you want to get into a relationship, you should first find out, well, what is your reasoning for it, and what is your ultimate end goal?
Right.
I just don't know if I'm saying the right things and if I should continue this friendship with her.
Well, there sounds to me, Lucy, like there are two tracks, you know, that this friendship is on. One is that you recognize that you could be a source of temptation to her if she's given herself over to this belief that she's bisexual and you know, to the extent that she's living this out. Well, if you are an object of desire, or if you are a near occasion of sin, however you want to put it, I can easily see why you might not want to continue the friendship for her sake, so that you're not a temptation to her every time the two of you get together. That in itself would be a noble thing, because you would be seeking her greater good. You know, that's the essence of a true friendship in any case, is that you are seeking the good of the other person. So I could see, for altruistic reasons, that that would be a good thing to do. On the other hand, you want to be able to share the truth with her, and maybe there's no one else in her life that she can, you know, that she can do this with. But the second track that I see could be the case, you'd have to be the judge, but it could be the case that it's a friendship, but is it really a friendship? Is it friendship based upon, you know, you enjoy each other's company and she's pleasant and she finds you pleasant? And okay, I mean, we all have acquaintances and people that we can enjoy hanging out with, but that's not like a friendship. So if you think that she genuinely has qualities that even given her feeling, her bisexual tendencies, I'm trying to figure out how best to say it, if there's something there that you might be able to help her get through that, get beyond that, and get back on track and have a friendship that's based upon truth, beauty, goodness, etc., maybe there's something there. But in the meantime, if it's just a matter of you kind of like each other, she likes you in a way that you don't like her, but you enjoy her company, and that's all it is, then I would say maybe the thing to do would be to politely just begin to disengage. And I say this only because, and I've never shared this on the radio before. In fact, I don't know that I've ever shared it publicly. But when I was a teenager, I was friends with a guy, and I actually started off by going out with his sister. And over the course of a summer, she and I spent a lot of time together. I was at their house a lot, and he was like a year or two older than her. So he was maybe a year older than me. And when my relationship with her ended, you know, it just faded away, and we both went back to school, and it was nothing dramatic or anything. But anyway, so he propositioned me, and he said, one day he just came over to me and we were talking, and he said, you know, I really like you. You're my friend. And I said, well, thank you, I appreciate it. And then he says, but I'd like to be more than a friend. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but there's no way that's ever going to happen. And that's when I just dropped the friendship. There was no point in me being a friend with him anymore, because he made it clear that he wanted something that was not going to happen. So I couldn't really be his friend. I couldn't talk to him and be around him knowing what he had said to me. So that's where we parted company. And it wasn't difficult for me. It might have been for him. I don't know. But I just knew that it was the right thing to do, because there was nowhere to go with it. So I just walked away from it. That might be what you have to do. Okay. Only you can make that decision, but for what it's worth, I once went through something kind of like that, and that's the decision I made. So, well, Lucy, I wish you well, and hopefully in the meantime, you can continue to evangelize this woman and keep her pointed in the right direction. Please, God. Let's go to Patrick now in Trenton, New Jersey. Good morning, Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, so I struggle with gluttony from time to time, and my biggest struggle is discerning where to draw the line with eating. Like, I enjoy going to buffets. I enjoy, you know, like three course. You know, I'm like, what, 240 pounds. Like, you know, I'm like middle, not overweight, but I have a good appetite. So, how do I know where I draw the line? Like, and sometimes I think maybe I'm overeating, but I'm not completely sure.
Well, a good rule of thumb is that if you're eating, well, let me put it this way. Gluttony is defined by St. Thomas as more than just merely overeating. So it's in his section on the vices, which is part of the section on the virtues. The only way to really understand virtue, and in this case, the virtue that opposes gluttony is temperance. So I'll get to temperance in a minute. But in his treatise on the virtues, St. Thomas talks about gluttony among the other capital sins. And he says gluttony, he says often gluttony is not a mortal sin. It can be a mortal sin, but it is the basis of this vice is cupidity. Cupidity is a word that means a kind of almost at times even a violent desire for something. And you could have cupidity in relationships with other human beings. You could have cupidity in relationships with food, etc. But what he says is that it can be overeating. That's one manifestation of it. It can also be a preoccupation with, you know, just being preoccupied about food and thinking about it and anticipating it and being overly concerned with the pleasure that is given by food because it's inordinate. That's his point. It's inordinate. And that's what makes it a sin. When it is not ordered toward its proper goal, and the goal in the case of food, of course, is to stay alive, but there's a secondary goal, and that is to enjoy the pleasure that we derive from food. And that is licit. You can enjoy that. And God made you, he made all of us, with the capacity to enjoy the pleasure that we get from food. I mean, let's face it. I think the human race would probably be a lot smaller if it weren't for the pleasure of eating food. So it's just the way God made us. But in the meantime, we have to master our bodily appetites so that we don't allow the desire for pleasure to overtake right reason and to then become a slave to the food. Or this is true of drink. This is true of sexual pleasure. It's true of pleasure in general. So when we denominate this pleasure as gluttony, the way to know is, am I a slave to this? Do I have the ability to say no to the second helping? Do you have the will to say, this is more food than I need. I'm full. I don't need to eat more food. And if you can say, well, you know, yeah, I'm full, but I could enjoy a little bit more, that's not a sin, and that's probably not gluttony. But if you say, if you could honestly say that you have a pattern in your life of overeating, it's just more than you need, it's more than is necessary, and maybe even more than that, yeah, you're probably dealing with gluttony. So the way to root that sin out is, this is true for just vice in general, the way to root that sin out is to begin practicing the opposing virtue, which is moderation. So to practice moderation means, how do you deny yourself, not entirely, but so that you get the food that you need, but you don't go overboard? And the very simple ways to do it, you could just make up your mind and say, I'm not going to have a second helping. I'm just not. And from this point forward, I will only have one helping at dinner or lunch or whatever. I'm not going to have more than that. And there are other ways that you could do that. But that's a way that you can say, to the extent, Lord, that I am gluttonous, I'm going to try to get rid of that in my life, and I'm going to practice the virtue of moderation. You know, you may say, well, sure, I could have another one, but I'm not going to. I'm going to offer that as a little sacrifice. And here's what happens, Patrick, is true with any virtue. And I'm here not as a paragon of virtue, don't get me wrong. I'm drawing upon those who are. I'm drawing upon what the saints have said about this issue. And that is, what happens is, at first it's difficult and it's even torturous to say no to a bodily appetite. But that's a sign that you're enslaved to it. So the more you say no to it, and the more you deny yourself, what happens is the easier that gets. So your default moves from the excess of gluttony to the golden mean of moderation. And the more you do this, the easier it becomes, to the point where that's now your stable disposition. So your stable disposition will be to practice moderation in what you eat. And you will then have more or less effectively defeated the vice of gluttony. So I would recommend, I have to take a break. I would recommend read a book by St. Francis de Sales. It's called An Introduction to the Devout Life. And he spends time on all of the capital sins, gluttony being one of them. And he gives advice on how little by little you can conquer it with God's grace. I'll be right back. Thanks, Patrick. We'll be right back.
keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, we're back. Time is slipping rapidly through our fingers. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be on the phones with you in just a moment. This email came in from Anonymous in Bakersfield. Patrick, I speak from years of experience, he says. I lost several wonderful relationships with Catholic women due to my secret addiction to porn. 20 years ago, I had what I believed to be a conviction of the Holy Spirit, and through daily rosary have defeated this vile addiction. I am now happily married to a wonderful woman. We have four beautiful children. I am committed to keeping them chaste through information, devotion to the sacraments, and age-appropriate conversations. That's all great. I've discussed it with my wife and often told her she would not have liked the old me. I'm so grateful to God for this chance to be a better man and encourage anyone struggling with this or any addiction to pray the daily rosary. And I love the show, he says. Thanks to you and Cyrus. Well, thank you, Anonymous. And I hear what you're saying. I think a lot of people listening right now are saying, well, there's some hope for me. So thanks for taking the time to do that. Also, somebody wrote in to say, what about Covenant Eyes? Well, I recommend Covenant Eyes all the time. I guess I didn't mention it today, but Covenant Eyes is a great company that will help you to have accountability if pornography is something you're struggling with. And just go to the website and you'll be able to see all the stuff that it will do for you. Another one that I like to recommend is called Accountable to You. So Accountable, the number two, and then YOU. Again, I have no connection with any of these groups, no benefit to me in any way by recommending them. But I know people who have benefited greatly from those porn filters and accountability softwares and things like that. Also, a note that came in from Mike, who is commenting on the TikTok video that we played the audio from, the young woman who is beside herself and angry and tearful that her grandmother wouldn't call her by the name Mike. And Mike in Phoenix wrote in to say, I found it interesting that she's upset that people won't accept her supposed truth by calling her Mike, but then goes on to acknowledge that she does not want to say her real name on the internet. So perhaps on some level, she does understand that one is the truth and the other is not. Kudos to the grandmother, as that letter was phenomenal and clearly heartfelt and full of love. I do agree with you on that point, for sure. Back to the phones now. Let's go next to Liz in Portland, Maine. Good morning, Liz. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I just had a story about my own struggle. I struggled for a long time with porn, which is, you know, it's a shameful thing as a woman, and I dealt with a lot of that, and I really thought that I was battling. But I think a part of me didn't really want to run to God with that until I actually ended up looking on Tinder and thinking, you know, this doesn't seem that dangerous. Maybe it would be okay to go on a date with somebody and, you know, go down that whole rabbit hole.
Were you single at the time or married at that time?
I was single at the time, but I wasn't looking for a Christian situation, if you know what I mean.
Right. I do. I know what you mean.
And I had a dream that night that I ended up in a very dangerous situation in this dream, and I really felt by that the Lord was sharing with me that, you know, that he could see me and that this was dangerous. And so ever since then, I had this impetus just to run to him, you know, and it was like a different kind of, instead of battling on my own, to take it to the Lord in prayer.
Good point. Can I make an observation, Liz? Because I have a theory, and I'd like to know if you think my theory is correct or not.
Yes.
And this is my theory. My theory is that, so take the Tinder example. I've never seen Tinder, so I don't have any personal experience with it, but I know what it is. I know it's a hookup app, and it's probably just one of a bunch that are like that. But my theory is that the way pornography works is that, I mean, this is sort of old hat. People, I think, have heard this a million times, but it's true. And that is, the more you get, the more you need. And like a drug, after a while, what you're used to getting high on doesn't get you high anymore. You've got to get more, stronger, you know. And so eventually, it seems to me inevitably, if somebody's looking at pornography long enough, it's going to transfer into acting out and physically starting to do things that you're seeing in the pornography. And so my theory is that it inevitably will lead to going on Tinder. And then once you're on Tinder, now you're no longer simply viewing it, you're now participating in it. And talk about dark and dangerous, and it just exponentially creates more problems in the life of somebody who goes down that road. Does that ring true to you, given your experience?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. And I mean, I have a friend who's Catholic who said that sin always leads to more sin. I just didn't really appreciate the danger until I kind of felt my feet slipping, and thank God that the Lord was there.
Yes.
With his grace.
What turned it around for you? Was it one thing or a series of things or a friend, or how did you turn away from that?
Well, the dream that I had, it was a really scary dream, so I don't want to say details, but
yeah, sure.
It was like a dream where I had gotten myself in a very dangerous situation and could have died by going on a date with somebody that I didn't really know, you know, from the internet.
Yeah.
And it kind of just opened my eyes to realize that it was the porn that was giving me this. And so then when I had thoughts of scrolling
and swiping
at that, I would remember that dream.
Yeah. So the dream was the catalyst then that got your attention and turned you back in the right direction. That's powerful.
I really feel like that dream, I mean, it wasn't a dream about God, you know, telling me to stop or anything like that, but I really felt like that was a special grace from him.
Yeah. Well, thank God. What a wonderful thing. And you can look back on that now and be in a position to give good counsel to other people in your life who may need to hear what you went through so they can avoid it or get out of it.
And I just want to say it was hard in the beginning, and I was turning to God a lot, but like you were telling that guy about overeating, it really does get easier once you keep turning to the Lord.
Yes. Yeah, that is so true. Well, gosh, thank you for sharing on that point. I realize it's personal, but I'm sure it helped a lot of people.
And thank you for your show, Patrick. This has been such a good thing for me to find your program, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you. It goes both ways, Liz. We appreciate you listening. And please tell all your friends about Relevant Radio. Portland, Maine, a great town. I've been there before, so I can picture all the Catholic folk listening to Relevant Radio in Portland, Maine, and points distant. Thank you, Liz. You know, Liz mentioned something that I'd like to just kind of tie in with St. Teresa of Avila, the great saint. She's a doctor of the church. She was in the 1600s in Spain, and she, by the time she was in the convent, she didn't realize how lukewarm she really was. And so she shares, and I'm going to read to you a vision that she was given. She had a near-death experience. In fact, everybody thought she had died, and they were preparing to bury her in a few days' time. There was no breath, there was no pulse, there was no sign of life. She just had been ill, and then she appeared to die. And here's what she wrote about this. She says, "I found myself, as I thought, plunged right into hell. I realized that it was the Lord's will that I should see the place which the devils had prepared for me in hell, which I merited for my sins. This happened in the briefest space of time, but even if I were to live for many years, I believe it would be impossible for me to forget it. The entrance, I thought, resembled a long, very long, narrow passage like a furnace, very low, dark, and closely confined. The ground seemed to be full of water, which looked like filthy, evil-smelling mud, and in it were many wicked-looking reptiles. At the end was a hollow place scooped out of a wall like a cupboard, and it was here that I found myself in close confinement. But the sight of all this was pleasant by comparison with what I felt there. My feelings, I think I could not possibly exaggerate, nor can anyone understand them. I felt a fire within my soul, the nature of which I am utterly incapable of describing. I had been put in this place which looked like a hole in the wall, and those very walls, so terrible to the sight, bore down upon me and completely stifled me. There was no light, and everything was in the blackest darkness. She said this vision was the most signal of favors which the Lord bestowed upon me. It has been of the greatest benefit to me, both in taking from me all fear of the tribulations and disappointments of this life, but also in strengthening me to suffer them, to give thanks to the Lord, who, as I now believe, delivered me from such terrible and never-ending torments. She said, it inspired me with fervent impulses for the good of souls, for I really believe that to deliver a single one of them from such a dreadful torture, I would die willingly many deaths. After all, if we see anyone on earth who is especially dear to us suffering a great trial or pain, our very nature seems to move us to compassion, and if his sufferings are severe, they oppress us too. So the point is, we have to take a break in a minute. Point is, she was lukewarm, and God showed her, this is where you're going to end up unless you change your path. And she did, and she became one of the greatest saints the church has ever known. And she's a hero of the Catholic faith. If you don't know the story of St. Teresa of Avila, get to know her. Read her Interior Castle book. It's one of the books she wrote. It's perhaps the best one she's best known for. But let her example be an example to you. In her case, and in the case of the lady I just talked to a minute ago, it was in the form of a dream. Now, she did come out of her stupor, and they didn't bury her, thankfully. They realized that she was having an out-of-body, near-death experience, and she came back to say, man, oh man, oh man, you better get right with God, because you don't want to go where I was on my way to. So learn from her. We can all learn from her, right? I know I can. We're going to come back in just a moment. So if you want to be on the air with me, here's the number to dial, 888-914-9149. I've got a frog in my throat. I'll clear him out while we take this break. And all of you holding on the phone, stay right there. I'm coming to you right after this.